the coal fields, the ability to bring cotton in on the ship canal and bring the coal in on the Bridgewater Canal into Manchester, where it could be spun, and that great explosion of ingenuity that's changed the world, and it changed that landscape, but unfortunately it left a devastated, scarred landscape in a lot of places. But that scarred landscape's been left alone. It's been filled with water, it's been filled with wildlife, it's got this incredible beauty to it, this incredible history, and it's a little bit neglected and forgotten often, and I'm really interested in how do we really celebrate the history of what happened here and the incredible potential for wildlife and people and engagement and activity that we've got now.
I think special magical moments for me on the Carbon landscape are any time I find myself wandering through nature where it's quiet enough to not hear any traffic or anything from an urban space.
And what's great about the William Flashes is how vast it is for such a large-scale kind of nature reserve to exist in such a built-up area and have so many access points for the public. I think it gives a great opportunity for people to connect with nature on a scale that they might not be able to in other areas. So, for example, Manchester. There's nothing as close by in Manchester as there is for Wigan here.
I really like spending time on the boardwalk at the Wigan Flashes because you get a feel of being stood in the middle of a reed bed where you would never really experience that. Spending time in nature is important for people's mental health and physical health. I think lots of people grow up in very urban environments these days, and being out in a wild place away from that helps people unwind and reconnect with what's theirs and what's natural.
It's got some wonderful sights and some wonderful wildlife. I stood at Low Hall Nature Reserve and watched male and female great-spotted woodpecker coming back and forth feeding their young, which is one of the most amazing wildlife experiences I've ever had.
Also, it's great because there's so much to see. There's so many different species right on our doorstep. You just take the time to sit and look around and listen just for 15 minutes. You'll see and hear an abundance of things you wouldn't even think were even there in the first place.
So what I like about Bickershaw Country Park is the unexpectedness of it. It's very closely compacted to the surrounding communities, and I think it's quite hard to discover at first, but once you do, it's this enormous site that you can really work your way into, and at certain parts of it, it does feel quite wild. It feels as though you are immune from the usual distractions when you're in urban parks. So traffic and construction sounds and the usual distractions aren't here, and that makes it feel very special. So some of the highlights of Bickershaw Country Park's wildlife are the roe deer that can be seen at dawn every morning grazing in front of the houses to the east of the site. I think it's important people visit sites like Bickershaw Country Park is the enhancement of well-being and the sense of attachment to the landscape that you don't necessarily get when you spend a lot of time around urban environments. It gives you a sense of freedom that you don't necessarily come across very often anymore, and that's what I think is so special about this site, is you don't expect to see it, you just sort of stumble upon it, or that's how the majority of people have found it, and once they do, they just want to come back and back and discover more and keep reaching out into it.
It's important to spend time in nature to give you the chance to forget about pressures and stresses of daily life. You know, green spaces have been proven to help people with mental health issues and general healing, and they're just places where you can go and forget. That's why I go to them. Just getting out into local green spaces and experiencing and photographing wildlife in particular is the way that I de-stress and forget about pressures mainly of work.
I think that spending time in nature can take your mind off day-to-day troubles. It's very easy to get bogged down and sucked into just a routine of life of getting up and going to work and getting up and going to work. If you make the time to just get outside into a green space, I think it gives time for the mind just to relax and calm down.
My name's James. I'm part of Launchpad Plus. I've been helping with the Carbon Project. And within that, we've been going to Pennington Flash to develop an edge trail.
I'm Katie Louise Hook. I'm from My Life at Future Steps, which is a day centre for people with learning disabilities. Well, it's a really nice place to visit. We go there a lot during the summer, sometimes in autumn as well, but mainly the summer because it's really nice. We want to get out and about. We do photography when we're there, and sometimes we do a bit of research, and we even have an art teacher, not in the Launchpad bit, but My Life bit, where we sometimes do sketches of the landscape. Personally, I like seeing the bird the bird huts where people birdwatch. I like to take photographs of them, and sometimes if I really like the picture, I'll try and sketch it myself. If you go in groups, then you've got a lot more to see and talk about. I remember when we were in one, me and my friends, we spotted a kingfisher. That was with My Life itself, not with the Wildlife Trust, but we do remember seeing the kingfisher. They were really beautiful.
And for me personally, I use Pennington Flash and run through Pennington Flash to go into work, and it's a valuable piece of space for the whole community, not just for people who I work with. And one thing I've noticed is that it is accessible for most people, but there are areas of it that do need room, or I've got room for improvement. And for me personally, I use Pennington Flash and run through Pennington Flash to go into work, and it's a valuable piece of space for the whole community, not just for people who I work with. And one thing I've noticed is that it is accessible for most people, but there are areas of it that do need room, or I've got room for improvement. We've used it now for a number of weeks within the course that we're doing, and we've noticed that a lot of the students we've got here and people who participate have really enjoyed using it as a photography location, particularly one of the people I support. Some of his work's fantastic, and it encourages people to sort of use the landscape and use their own initiative, and it improves confidence in their own abilities to do things. With the flash, there are a number of hides there which we can come and observe all the various wildlife that inhabit the area. I find it's a really good place to come and have that quiet time. And it's not very often during the working day that certainly some of our service users have that quiet space and be able to reflect on what they're seeing and have that sort of time to sort of, you know, go into themselves and just enjoy that space. For me, it's a massively valuable part of the community and a really valuable part of where we are and where we're situated in. It's just an amazing space for everyone to use. It's been really interesting to see the group develop, or the two groups develop, and certainly with a lot of people with disabilities, there can be confidence issues, and it's been really interesting to see that their confidence as a group has grown and confidence in individuals has grown, and this would not, you know, it'd be a lot more difficult to achieve if we didn't have this valuable area.
So this is called Resurgence, and in brackets of nature. It does that to you, this place of peat, when birds myriad arrive at my feet. Keep calm and enjoy this special place, where pink feet, hooper, plus widgeon I face. plus calls of golden plover and dunlin unseen, while schools are plenty, rest and preen. Pause from these words and listen to lark, peer in the sky, today so grey, so stark. As larks were noted, 14 snipe appear. Little Walden Moss, they love it so dear. A place of resurgence for nature, you see, thanks to those at the LWT.
The sites in Salford probably have more of a connection for me. Little Walden Moss is one of my preferred sites just because of how it highlights the changes in seasonal variances. So, you know, in winter time you can go and it looks dark and desolate and it can be turned magical with a bit of snowfall, and then in spring it'll just come alive.
It's location as well. You think we're smack bang in the middle of Chat Moss here. So to the north we've got Astley and Bedford, we've got the Chat Moss and 12 Yards Road, we've got Cadishead next to us, and then to the south we've got Risley, Holcroft Moss, Pespalong, all over there. So, you know, you see, this is the link in the middle. So, you know, in terms of building a whole wetland landscape, this is the sort of like, it's a piece of the jigsaw that we've got in place, and we can find out where all the other pieces need to go from this one.
Yeah, as you said, it's that connectivity that's important. You know, this is one of the central sites to the Mosslands. They're all currently fragmented. Chat Moss would have been one huge Mossland area, about 30 odd kilometres square. So what we're left with is just the odd fragment here and there, and we've kind of restored what we can, or we're restoring what we can at the moment, and this is one of the central bits. And as if we can get the other sites as well, absolutely brilliant. We're then looking at actually linking them together as well to get a whole landscape back, which has been lost from history really. And most people don't know this is here because access hasn't been good. It's been a peat extraction site. It's no fun kind of walking around here choking on peat as it's being blown up by the extractors, but this now is just, you know, as Dave said, it's a fantastic view that we're looking at. It's just peaceful and relaxing, and there's so much wildlife there. So hopefully the people of Salford will come in and appreciate this site now, and gain a better understanding of the local history as well.
But the birds are coming back now. You're getting many pipits on this. I do a bird saving for the Wildlife Trust. I've just done it in this section. You get nothing there. You get the many pipits. All the blackbirds are starting to find somewhere to feed in. Yellow wagtails coming in here to feed. It's just like he's bringing it all back. Curlews. I love. They did a tent to nest on here, and now they're becoming successful to nest on here because it was bland peat. It was too open. Things would take off the eggs. Now they've got young. I've just saw a young the other day. Came across here. Red shank nest to the back. Yellow wagtails in the edge of it. Birds in the fields come and feed over here. Insects galore. Now you come here, and certain days can be just absolute waves of dragonflies. And also at night time you come down here and you see a fog. You're walking in now, you see a fog, and the fog is insects. You know, it's just birds everywhere. Swifts come in, everything's taken all the insects. It's a joy, an absolute joy to be here now. This is all because of the Wildlife Trust. This is the Lake District to the Lowlands, isn't it? It really is. It really is.
But it's the people of Salford site as well, and they really need to come out and look at this because it is just amazing.
Generates this need, this love, this affection that will keep on giving, and it gives and gives, doesn't it? Look at this now. I mean, all these snow flurries of cotton grass now. It's a joy, isn't it? Really.
You get this magical scene of the ground. The black peat looks like snow because there's so much cotton on it at the moment. Cotton blowing through the air. So much plant cover now. So much green stuff as it's trapping the seed. We're seeing heathers and the rare crossleaf heath that we've planted, just covered in. Like they're covered in snow, but just covered in cotton. So they're trapping the seed, staying on the site, and things will get better and better. There was a guided walk put on for the Carbon Landscape volunteers, and just at the top corner over there, we got mobbed by a pair of curlew. One of them came to ground and started parading in front of us to attract our attention. Must have had fledglings on the ground somewhere.
I saw them.
And then, 10 minutes later, a yellow wagtail coming to ground 30 feet away from us, and there's a really, you know, hardcore bird recorder just saying she's never seen anything like it before. It's that kind of place. This magic happens here all the time. People that arrive here, some kids from Salford Young Carers came up here, and one of them just saw the vista looking out over the reserve and just said, wow, it's big. Which it is, this huge broad horizon. You can see Rivington Pike over to the north. You can see the moors above New Mills and Whaley Bridge, the other side of Manchester. Superb sunsets. I've never seen so many rainbows as on this piece of sky. And people fall in love with it. And you see that in the commitment of more than just a few people that come out here in... Yeah, we were out here in Siberian weather over the winter, literally with when the beast from the east was hitting us, banging and piling, doing hard work to keep warm. Just breathe and take it all in.
My name's Dave Steele. I love these Mosslands. I've been a great lover of the Mosslands for many years. First time I ever came on the Mosslands was back in... Well, really, 1958. This is the Bridgewater Canal over at Worsley. And then when I was about 10 or 12, I met some bird watchers and they showed me a place called Bedford Moss. The Mosslands have been my love ever since, really. That's the thing about the Merlin. It's the same size as a mistlethrush. A mistlethrush is just larger than a blackbird. So it's a very small raptor, but it has such strength of flight and has such strength of character. And I was trying to get across the fact that, you know, it owns this moss. You know, I am here. I am nature. You know, and these other birds may be at ease with themselves whilst I'm sat here. But wait till I get up in the air. Then they know to scatter in fear.
I'm Linda Egan. I've lived around here for 35 years. I'm obviously not from here. I come out on these meadows almost every day, and I just think it's just the best place to be.
I'm Mike Kenwright. I was born and raised in Woolston, lived here for 20 odd years, and all this area around here was my roaming ground as I was growing up.
I just really love coming onto these meadows. It's, you know, my favourite place to come with the dog. We come probably nearly every day, and I meet lots of other dog walkers. I've made so many new friends from coming on here. It's just a pleasure to be here, especially this time of the year when we've got some really beautiful flowering roses and the hawthorn's just gone off, the elderflowers come on. Great place for foraging. We'll be out looking for sloes later on. Just a lovely place to be. The wonderful thing is that this is the last piece of riverside farmland in the whole of the Warrington boundary. Many years ago, all of the Mersey Valley would have been farmed on both sides, but with the coming of the Manchester Ship Canal, a lot of the farmland was lost to that. There's been so much new housing in Warrington since the 1900s, really, that a lot of the farmland has been swallowed up by developments. And this piece, because it is liable to flooding from time to time, hopefully will never be built on. So it's just wonderful to have this as a historical asset as well as the wonderful ecology asset that it is. So Warrington Borough Council is currently the owner of it, and they hopefully will keep it for us as a nature reserve.
It was water meadows originally, wasn't it? And Bennett, the farmer who gave it to Warrington, he had a cattle farm just the other side of Manchester Road from here, and his cattle all came on here to graze. And since then we've had longhorn cattle on for a while grazing as well, but they've gone. But as a place to walk around, superb. The, shall we say, flora and fauna of the place is just fantastic. It is amazing, the various species that you can find on here. Superb.
And I think, if I remember correctly, there's a total of 70 species of birds have been recorded on the meadows over the last 2 years. So that's pretty good going, really, and it shows that something about the ecology here is working.
Hey, we come on once a month and do a survey, plus the willow tit survey, which is fascinating. It's a different aspect again of bird watching, and I enjoy it very much.
We have a monthly bird survey that we put on our webpage, and we do a once a year total of all the birds seen, all the highlights. The bird group is actually very, very popular, isn't it? It's probably one of the most participated groups within the whole of the New Cut Trail, the little group we have of volunteers who do all sorts of things on here. Yeah. Everything from hedge laying to litter picking. It's so important to be out in the sunshine, absorbing your daily dose of vitamin D, and it just makes you feel so much better.
It helps to keep the blood pressure down as well. Keeps my doctor happy.
Yeah, I'm Kevin Price. I'm chair of the New Cut Heritage and Ecology Trail Group. Bit of a mouthful, but a group of volunteers, local residents, and we try and do our bit. We try to encourage the local people to visit the meadows and the trail and keep it tidy. We do a bit of litter picking, we do tree cutting, we've been doing some hedge laying, which has been good fun. More of that to come once the birding season has finished, the nesting season, and just generally enjoying ourselves. It's dramatic in winter, some lovely winter scenes. We've got a member of our group who's a very, very good photographer. Mike is as well, that's here today. But Tony does some wonderful photographs. He was on TV again this week on the Weather Channel. And the dramatic skies and the snow, the frost, and then good weather like we've been having for the past fortnight. So we see all seasons down here, and the meadows change dramatically over that period. One of the last few remaining river meadows in the country, I believe. We're encouraging young ones. We've got some beaver groups who've been out on bat walks and making bat hides, and that's more of that to come. We attend local shows to encourage people, and the response we're getting is amazing. We've got different aspects to our work. We've got the ecology side, the environmental side. We've got a bird group. We've got a heritage group. Our own resident speaker here in Mike Kenwright gives some extremely interesting talks to the public, free meetings, donations only, and the interest that has sparked in the history of the area and what's there now, and more people are coming down and commenting upon it, which is really good.
In the last 12 months, yes, we've had the odd yellowhammer showing up, which is quite unusual for this area. So we're lucky in that respect. And buzzards, we get quite a few buzzards circling over most days. That we do a willow tit survey, yeah. They're very rare, but not in my garden, because all winter long they're on my bird feeders. Everyone's jealous of that fact.
The work that we do, it seems to be being encouraged and approved of by the residents. And then working with the council, they can see the work that we're doing, and they're putting their resources into it. The rangers are very helpful. The council are putting resources in. The Environment Agency in particular has been extremely helpful on the work they did on the flood defences in this area, and worked very closely with us, and we're very grateful to that. And that's showing in, I think, the amount of interest that we're seeing now. Mm.
Well, it's certainly encouraged more people to come along here since it's been that the two lock ends have been tidied up somewhat,
yeah.
And especially at Woolston, they've done a superb job there. And the number of people, as you say, mentioned on Facebook, I've got to get down there and see that, you know. Yeah. That was our Sunday walk down to the Manchester Ship Canal.
When all you can hear is dragonfly wings as they dash about pools doing serious things, whilst your eyes start to lull in the heat of this day, it's hard to envisage Manchester only 10 miles away. Then Peters is broken in sweet gentle song, with a willow warbler so small, yet voice so strong. A blackbird gives forth, but tries not too hard, for midday approaches in this nature's backyard. Then up through some lapwing unsettled all, grabbing my attention with their alarm call. My eyes fixed firmly on blue sky around, in search of their problem, peregrine found. Out in a mossland on this hot day in June, Nature's rhythm follows its pulsating tune. Heat tried to tie me and slow me down, but rest was impossible with all nature's sound.
You've seen Little Walden and Oather Bristowe in that. This is slightly different when you look at it. You can see these ditches here. Like they're sort of drained the bog. That's how they used to cut the peat. So this was active for many a year, and even when I started in 2007, it was covered in trees like the woodland on both sides of it. But we could see, especially with advice from our lead Natural England advisor, that actually it was bog, remnant of bog being drained, which had been isolated from the main mossland. Considering we've lost 98% of lowland raised bog, and you can't create it. It was created after the Ice Age. You can make a woodland, you can buy a field, leave it, trees will start to grow in it. Within 20 odd years you'll have a developing woodland with bog, unless you actively go and try and restore it. And you're going to lose it, and it's a special habitat in itself. European-wide, international key, some of the sphagnum mosses on there which develop have developed for the very purpose of retaining that water and can survive without very little nutrition, which is why on the edges you have a certain type of fen vegetation. So teaching people about this local aspect of their heritage is really quite key, really, especially with young children. They love it. They come on, it's a bit springy, it's a bit bouncy. So they start to learn to explore it in that way. Other things, some of the species attracted to it, mosslands, at Risley Moss we've got the adder, we've got common lizard, we've got grass snake, we have slow worm. So they're some of the key species related to it. And because we've got various different bog pools or water bodies, as the mire or the boss and the bog is developing, we've got 16 species of breeding dragonfly. Opening this area up here, with children, getting them out to the main mossland is a bit tricky, because by the time we get them to where it is, they need the toilet and they want pop and crisps. Whereas this area here, we can use this for education. We wanted to put a nice boardwalk in for an all-access, wheelchairs, prams. Everyone can access this now and be out in the developing mossland, see it develop with the cock grasses and the sedges, sphagnum mosses, close up to all the species using it, all the dragonflies, all the birds flying over. The important bit is the environmental education aspect of this area for local schools, regional schools to come along, learn about mosslands, wetlands, and how all these ecological networks link together. And things don't just look pretty, they actually do a very valuable thing. Mosslands are fantastic for carbon capture, which is improving our air that we breathe and doing good things to prevent climate change. So within the one of the main impacts that I've seen since we completed this mini moss project within the carbon landscape, when we planned it and designed it, we looked at the aspect of, so we need to put bunding in to hold the water, the rainwater in, to give the right conditions for the mossland, very much thinking about habitat restoration from a technical point of view, because that's our role, that's our job. Also understanding we need to get people out in about within it and explore it. But actually the feedback from people now that can actually walk through it, so much positive feedback. Thank you for putting the boardwalk in. It's absolutely fabulous to be able to walk through so close up to the dragonflies. Some of the people who used to come to Risley Moss and they try and capture pictures of dragonflies can now walk along the boardwalk, stay in one position, and they visit them. So it's a return, it's the other way around. Our future prosperity will be tied in within projects such as this. Hello, I'm Mark. I'm one of the rangers here at Risley Moss. I'm responsible in many key ways for looking after the site of special scientific interest and the special area of conservation, which is the mossland, helping apply legislation, introduce habitat restoration and site management, and also make sure that we engage the public with those processes.
Well, I'm Andy Pearson. I live about 150 yards from Risley Moss Gate. My involvement with the site, other than being a regular visitor, is back in 1990. A group of residents got together to try and prevent the closure of the moss as a public facility, which fortunately we were able to do, and I've remained involved with the group which sort of fronts public opinion locally ever since. We started as a protest group, which was in reaction to then Cheshire County Council's plans to close the place. It's now under the stewardship of Warrington Borough and the Rangers, Mark and Gaynor, and is as secure as I think it's likely to be in the foreseeable future. Risley Moss is the reason I moved to the area. People can get up close and personal, if you'll forgive the cliche, with the natural surroundings, and that improves all the time, as exampled by the new boardwalk that we've got. The footpath system takes in other parts that are a bit mossy and boggy, but there's also meadows, woodlands, ponds, and more or less everything that you would find in the British countryside, but within an arm's reach. There's a therapeutic aspect of being able to walk round a place like Risley Moss. I think this applies to countryside in general, but certainly less formal setups, such as the moss itself, seem to have a soothing, relaxing effect on people.
My name's Gaynor Kerry. I'm one of the two rangers here at Risley Moss. I think it's just the general ambience of coming to Risley Moss. It's because it's completely surrounded by housing, and fairly modern housing estate as well, built in the 1970s. It's almost like an escape into... You walk through the gates and you feel a sort of... pleasant feeling of tranquility, really, because you're surrounded by the woodland, all the trees, and of course with the peat bog area is just fantastic. You can either go and find a nice grassy corner and sit down and have a bit of peace and quiet, or you can go to the bird hides, and that's a fantastic thing to do, especially in winter, because the bird hides can be really busy with up to 20 species. The excitement of never knowing what sort of birds you're going to see going past. Migration times, of course, are really exciting. We do a lot of with especially younger children, primary school children, and also with we do a lot with brownies and cubs and so on, and it's brilliant. So you can either do something that's really fun, letting them run off steam like a treasure hunt, so they have a really good experience of coming here and they remember it as being fun, but also it's just a gift really for teaching primary school children, as well as the natural history, where the dragonflies of course are really exciting at the moment, and with the addition of this new boardwalk here at the Mini Moss, I brought a group of rainbows out the other night, and they were able to spread along the boardwalk and it was still sunny, and they were just so excited because it was probably the first time they'd seen these mythical dragonflies, and there were just loads of them all laying eggs right in front of the boardwalk, and to be able to do that is brilliant because it's just right there. They didn't have to walk far and they have an experience of nature straight away, so that's absolutely brilliant. We just have a gift really for presenting history as an interesting thing, as Risley Moss is going back to the farming era, then the digging up of the peat industry, through to a bomb factory in the Second World War, and then a reclamation as the fantastic nature reserve that it is now. Sometimes the children get so excited, especially with the little damselflies, which are the sort of electric blue ones, because they often say, well, look, the fairies. They think they're fairies, and maybe that's where it all came from. And they're walking along the peat bunds, and they absolutely love it, because there'll be bees and there'll be grasshoppers, and as well as that, they can feel the peat bog under their feet. And without fail, after a while, they'll all start bouncing, and they'll be saying it's a bouncy castle. So it's a really fun experience for them as well.
I'm Helen Stewart. I'm a storyteller, and this This place is a hidden gem. Our ancestors knew all about the peat box. 3,000 years ago, the Bronze Age people felled great oaks and laid them along the edge of the peat bog. They laid them wide enough for two chariots to go side by side, because the peat bogs were the liminal areas of the heart of Albion. Not land, not water, but a mixture of both. And when the solstice came, as it will come soon, and the sun would stand still, they would walk along the oak roads that they had built, and they would travel them with their chariots, and they would come to the liminal edges here at the peat bog. And there they would, when the Romans threatened England and Albion was frightened, some people laid down their lives in the peat bogs to try to ensure that Albion would be safe. And we found them there thousands of years later. Lindow Man. Dug up from Lindow, Flindu, the Black Lake. And shown in Manchester Museum in the 1980s. But found in the peat bogs. Yeah. Peat bogs are very special. And there are little yellow flag lilies, golden in the sunshine. And huge bulrushes bursting with seeds. It's a pretty amazing place. And the speed of which modern life just goes at, that means that people need these little hidden gem places. That this place started as a peaceful liminal area, a peat bog, peaceful, quiet, and worshipped possibly, certainly revered and respected as an area. And then the 20th century came in and the munitions factory was built on here. A terrible object lesson in how not to run a century, really. But now, thanks to the local people, the rangers and the volunteers, this is now once again a peaceful and pleasant place to visit. People come with their dogs at the end of a hard working day. They come for a walk first thing in the morning. I've heard somebody say they came in the middle of the night when they were troubled, just to walk these peaceful, calm pathways.
Hi, my name's Annie Mather. I'm a friend of Gorse Covert Mounds and I've lived in Birchwood for the past 9 years. It's just a joy to live here. And it's not just for young people, middle-aged people or elderly people. It's for everyone. I love walking round the different paths. And it's not just visually, it's your senses as well. And when you're coming down, when you're walking round the different routes, you can come onto this boardwalk here, you can look into the pond, you can see different varieties of wildlife. You hear things, you hear the trees in the background sort of whooshing and everything. And it's different at different times of day. If you come down at night, it's a bit more, I don't know, unnerving if you're on your own, a bit unnerving, but it's still beautiful. The marshland place, you can it's as if it's spiritual. You can feel back your ancestors, what it must have felt like for them years ago to have walked this area. And it amazes me that people have walked here before. All right, it may not have looked like this, but they must have got the same pleasure that we have. And it's places like this that, you know, that we can promote that these walkways and it, you know, it can be a safe haven for children to be brought along.
The links between people and nature in this landscape are so important. We're really looking at within the carbon landscape at how do we join up sites across this whole landscape to give nature more space, the opportunity to move, the opportunity to spread. So hopefully really looking at how we can get these species that are under such threat, the willow tits and the sort of the little tiny pockets that we have left, how can we give them more space to grow and to move? Really looking at these the opportunities for restoring, but also we want to look at how we can inspire people to think, I'm part of the carbon landscape, to really think about how we can create more opportunities for nature in our landscape, both in the kind of major iconic sites, but in the little bits in between, in the gardens, in the spaces that we have. And I think that's also an incredible opportunity for people to connect to the landscape, to their history, to nature, to each other, to opportunities to volunteer. Great for health, great for people's enjoyment and happiness. For people connecting to nature, I think it's for community members, and indeed for our partners and the people who work with nature professionally, it's part of who we are. It's where we're from. It's our connection to the very ground we stand on, the water we drink, the food we eat, the air we breathe. I think we need nature for our health, for everything that it gives us, but also for our happiness, for our well-being. So I think for me, the connection to nature is something about a very deep, fundamental sense of who we are, where we are. And I'm really, really keen to think about where we're going. How can we live more in a more ecologically sound way? How can we learn the lessons of the past and say, what can we do differently so that where we live and how we live is more in tune with nature? It's more beautiful. It's got more opportunities. And we actually learn how to live in a more ecologically sound way. That's part of what I'd like to see from more contact with nature. For me, personally, getting out into the carbon landscape has just completely rejuvenated my sort of enjoyment in my local landscape. Part of what I think is so exciting about the Carbon Landscape Project is it's not only the story of the Industrial Revolution and the landscape that literally fueled it. It also enables us to really understand where we could go as society, because it's got almost all the, it's got the core lessons of what we've done wrong in terms of sustainability. So we've got the coal fields, all that coal and carbon that we've been pumping into the atmosphere. We've got this whole idea of bringing cotton in along the ship canal. You can make more money if you dye it bright colours. All the chemistry that's gone on to really change how we interact with nature through chemistry. And in fact, around here in the Risley Moss and the Gorse Mound area, there's a lot of contamination from industry and from the munitions factories. We're looking at how do we remediate that? What can we do to fix that problem? And then you've got this whole problem of destroying the very ecosystems we live on. Okay, that's the lessons, what we've done wrong. Those are the fundamental ways that we destroy the environment. What can we do differently? How can we learn so that in the future we balance our weight, all the things we bring into society with nature, so that we don't create the chemicals that every chemical we create can break down and turn back into nature, and we restore the ecosystems around us. If we do that, we can have a thriving, wonderful society in the future. This landscape can teach us how to do that.